from Drift Bar for a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bring you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town?
Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. Belmer behind the glass on this Friday afternoon. B-Mac and Sean Mapes are on-site engineers because we're at Drift in the Heights. Drift Bar, one of the best places in the city of Houston. One of the best happy hours in the city of Houston. One of the best places to spend a Friday afternoon in the city of Houston. Everybody likes to leave work early on a Friday. Today's the greatest time to do it because the weather is beautiful. There's baseball on from right now until the time you go to bed. And then you can also take advantage of all these drink specials. 97.5 Beer Bucket Special. 5 domestic beers, $20 during the broadcast. If you can't make it out here today, they are the official watch party for LSU. They have the NFL package, so a great place to watch your NFL games as well. But we want to see you out here. We'll be here to 3. Wheelhouse will be here from 3 to 7. Something else you're feeling really good about. Houston Astros up 2-0 as they head to Seattle. Best place you can possibly be for the Houston Astros.
Boy, you ain't kidding about that. And, you know, doing what we did yesterday and then catching the second half of that game. I mean, there were times where you had some concerns, but we had said yesterday during the course of our show, I flat out said I didn't think Scott Service was ever going to pitch to Yordan Alvarez again. But I did mention to you when we were talking, I said, you know, Castillo's the kind of guy that believes that his 100 plays out anywhere and pitchers have confidence and an ego too. I didn't think he was going to do that, and I didn't think he was going to challenge him twice in a row, and he got one high in the zone. And Yordan turned it around, put it in the Crawford boxes, and now, lo and behold, you are in the ultimate driver's seat in a 5-game series.
I think the Mariners started off that game exactly how the Mariners wanted to start off that game. After the demoralizing Game 1 loss, Yordan buries their souls with that 3-run walk-off home run, and then Yordan hitting, of course, the go-ahead home run yesterday. First time in Major League Baseball history that a dude that has hit a walk-off home run in a playoff game hits a go-ahead home run the very next day. So Yordan Alvarez, there's been 2 games in this playoff. Yordan Alvarez has set history twice. So it kind of shows you the early postseason that Yordan Alvarez is having. He's off to a tremendous start. But from a Seattle perspective, that's exactly the start that they wanted. You know, the Astros get the early lead. You didn't want that from a Seattle perspective, the Kyle Tucker moonshot. But then you scratch. You get a couple off Framber Valdez. You have the lead. Your ace is on the mound. Like, that is exactly how Seattle wanted to get back into the series. You want to hold that lead from a Mariner perspective. You split the series in Houston. You take it back to Seattle, stealing the home field advantage. But Yordan Alvarez does it again.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where, as we know, it's an ebb and flow series. It's also an ebb and flow game from game to game, and we've talked about how it gets ramped up in playoff baseball. Anything can happen at any time. Tucker sets the tone for you to get off to a good start, but then Framber, just as much as he was cruising, you know, runs into trouble, and it's exactly what we talked about again yesterday. He mentally was crushing himself and the home plate umpire as much as anything else, and he was pressing. And he gave up a couple of runs.
Which wasn't a strike, by the way.
No, like, it wasn't.
It's one thing to get animated about a missed call. That wasn't over the plate.
And every different angle, and no matter what K-zone you were looking at, it wasn't, but he couldn't put it out of his head. And I think on the flip side, Jeremy, that happened to Castillo too. Because I think on the blooper behind second base, he really thought it should have been caught. And so he, whether right or wrong, he let the emotions get to him, because you could see he, body language-wise, was pretty ticked off that ball wasn't caught.
Sure.
And then coming back to face Yordan, he had a little bit of the red ass going. And I heard Roger Clemens talking about this morning on the bench, too, that as a pitcher, maybe he got even more ramped up than usual to say, I can beat this guy. And he got the first one, which was fouled off, to where he probably felt like, well, he ain't that great.
Uh-huh.
And then, boom, lo and behold, he makes a mistake. Yordan capitalizes, takes it the other way, and here you go.
The thing with that, though, like, I hear where you're going with that, but the pitch wasn't even a strike. Like, I don't know if he, like, he didn't make a mistake. He didn't leave one over the middle of the plate. He didn't hang a breaking ball. No, I'm talking about Castillo.
Oh.
After the Peña blooper, Yordan's home run was this far off the outside corner.
Oh, no.
So Castillo didn't make a mistake. Like, he didn't let the Peña blooper bother him to the point where he's made a bad pitch that Yordan drove out of there.
Clemens kind of thought that it was closer than you did. I just know that Scott Service should have sent the message to the entire pitching staff, no matter what, that, look, we don't want to let this guy beat him. If there's nobody on base right there and you want to go at him a little bit, fine. But you now have the go-ahead run at the plate, and you know what he can do damage-wise.
Uh-huh.
And that's a situation later in the game where you don't want to mess with him.
What's going at him, though? Like, because that pitch was that far off the plate. It was a baseball away from the strike zone.
But you and I doing the, and I think it was during the final hour where we might not have been going out over the air, but we talked about his reach and his ability that it's abnormal in terms of what anybody else can get to. He can get to because of the fact that he's got reach and the way he has his plate coverage on the outside half. So for whatever the reason, and maybe part of it too was, like I said, that he believes that he could beat Jordan as well. But it came back and bit him again, and then they, you know, they saw their way through to get another victory. The bullpen once again doing their job, Dusty maneuvering. I'm sorry if I missed this because I got into a little bit of a Twitter tiff
with who?
Some guy named Timmy, who basically, when I asked the simple question, is there something wrong with Ryan Stanek?
We Twitter didn't see him in game one. Timmy.
Yeah, we didn't see him in game one. We didn't see him in game two. I saw Francoeur later with Brian Anderson question the same thing, like, why isn't he even warming up? And this guy was like, yeah, you dumbass. I mean, didn't you see the press release? There was no press release. And by the way, then he later sent me the article in the Chronicle where it said some players on the team may have been sick. I don't see I didn't see Ryan Stanek's name associated with that.
No.
And I had questions as to why he wasn't warming up.
He was in the bullpen, and Dusty was asked after the game if Ryan Stanek was available. He got asked point blank, was Ryan Stanek available today? And Dusty said, yeah, he's available.
See, there you go.
Yeah.
So then, you know, Timmy can suck it because he was wrong. And I, you know, and then later he was like, oh, but go Stros. Oh, you know, go kiss my ass. But at the same time, you know, even without Ryan Stanek, the bullpen was capable of doing what it did.
It's been really good.
And did a solid for the team that looks like to be in command of this series going back now to Seattle.
We'll probably be mostly Astros today, almost all Astros today. And since it's a Friday, we don't really care. And Brendan's gone, so we can do whatever we want.
That's true.
This can be your show if you want it to be, Hive. 713-780-ESPN. We'll get to all of your questions, all of your comments, all of that. 713-780-3776. We'll talk in great detail about what the game plan is against Jordan Alvarez the rest of the way. We'll talk about the bullpen. But how about the mental state for both of these teams heading to Seattle? The Astros are up 2-0. This ALDS, I think it's more important to end a series as quickly as you possibly can. That way you can shape the pitching staff as well as you, exactly how you want it, for a seven-game series that's going to take place over 8 games. This year's ALCS will not have an off day after Game 5. So you're looking at, you're probably going to have to start 5 pitchers. If you're whoever's starting in Game 1, Game 2 will be the only starters that will go twice in this series. So more than ever, I think it is important to end an ALDS series early. That's why Game 3 is very important for the mindset of, okay, let's shape up the pitching staff how we want it in the ALCS. Two, you just want to go ahead and bury a team. And then from a Seattle perspective, hey, they're down 0-2. Scott Servais says, hey, we've been close. The series is going to turn around in Seattle. It's tough to win on the road. Where do you think both teams are in terms of the philosophy, the psychology of it?
Well, I think from a psychological standpoint with a veteran locker room, I think this Astros team kind of goes along with what you said to start that comment, and that is the fact that they need to take care of business as soon as possible. Let's, while we have them down, step on their throat, end this thing as quick as possible, move on to the next one as swiftly as they possibly can. Because you don't want a team like this to linger. Because the more they linger, if they get that home crowd and they get a raucous environment and they get a win, it hasn't been blowouts in the first 2 games. They know that they've been in both games. If they get one, they're going to think, why can't we get two? Why not us? Why not this year? The same way they got to the playoffs after 20 years and did what they did to the Blue Jays. You give them any glimmer of hope and a spark can become a flame, can become a towering inferno if you allow it. That's why I think as a veteran ball club in this locker room, they're saying, we're not screwing around, fellas. Yeah. We're going for the jugular right now. We're going to end this thing because I believe Seattle is young and cocky enough to think, if we get one, we're not done.
Look, if you... Here's the thing, too. Like, you're up 2-0. I understand that all of the Hive and every Astro fan, series over, all of that. You know, after the way that you went in Game 1 where you basically steal their souls right out from under them, or right from them. Same thing in Game 2. You have the lead Seattle does with their ace on the mound, and then Jordan Alvarez might not have been the walk-off, but he does it again. The two-run homer off the ace. You beat their ace. So it feels like, okay, this series is over. But Seattle is going back home. Look, Scott Servais, we're mocking, oh, it's very tough to win on the, you know, on the road. We're going to be fine whenever we go to Seattle. Seattle's not going to be an easy place to get a victory. They're going to be lively. They're going to be ready to go. Also, like, they got some dudes on the mound. George Kirby, pretty good. He's starting in Game 3. Logan Gilbert, he's going to be on full rest. He's going to go in Game 4. Those aren't layups. Those aren't easy victories. And I want no part of an anything-can-happen Game 5. And I guarantee you that Seattle would go to Luis Castillo on 3 days' rest.
No doubt they would. And he would want the ball. And you could tell just how dialed in he was that, you know, even after the home run, there was no way he was giving the ball up to Scott Service. He was going to still keep fighting, thinking that they had a chance, and he wanted to get a W. And why wouldn't you do that if that scenario would present itself? That's why you've got to step on them while they're down and end this thing. I keep thinking about those damn shirts that they decided to make before the series about Houston, we're your problem. Well, you know what? Not for very much longer if they just do what they're capable of doing. And I think they got the right guy on the mound in McCullers, too, because yep. I think that he's a gamer. He's a tough guy. And he's good on the road, and he's been there in Chicago a year ago when he had to do it, and he did it, and he's looking forward to doing it again, and I like that mentality and having that kind of mentality on the mound.
He's got some moxie. Everybody points to his home road splits, which the home road splits are true. I mean, he's much better at home than he is the road. There's no arguing that. Facts are facts. I do feel like that has trended in a more even direction over the last couple of years. Last year, he was fine on the road. You mentioned the start he had against the White Sox where he put the White Sox away. Now, he did strain his whatever that cost him to miss the rest of the postseason and then a good chunk of this year's regular season. But, you know, usually he's somebody that needs optimal conditions.
Yep.
But the weather's supposed to be great in Seattle. I like the idea of Lance McCullers there too. But I think it is critical to close it out in Seattle. Game three even better because that sets you up for an ALCS in which you have seven games potentially over the course of 8 days, which could be tough. All right, we're just getting started at Drift out in the Heights. Come swing on by, say hello to us, 1207 West 20th. Killer Bees will be here until 3. The Wheelhouse will be here until 7. Take advantage of the drink specials. Take advantage of the happy hours. A great spot to have a drink as you're trying to leave work early. It's a great spot to watch the games as well. We're watching little Guardians-Yankees. Guardians with a little bit of a threat.
Early rally.
In the first inning against, what do they call him? Nestor the Molester?
I didn't want to repeat that.
That's a quote. I'm not the one saying it. I'm quoting somebody else that said it. But, yeah, this is the place to watch some ball, have a drink on a Friday afternoon. All right, let's talk about how Seattle is going to pitch to Yordan the rest of the way. We'll get you involved as well. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. If you're looking for a place to bet all of these baseball matchups, if you're looking for a place to bet some NFL action on Sunday, some college action tomorrow, BetUS.com is the place to do it. They're back for their 28th year of NFL action, industry's biggest sign-up bonus of up to 200%. BetUS offers the members the opportunity to cash in on all of your favorite leagues, NFL, college football, Major League Baseball, NBA about to get started, and plenty more. While you sweat out those sports bets, how about you head over to the casino game portion of BetUS, including the coolest European slots. They also have live dealers waiting for you at the tables for all those table games. You need a sportsbook with integrity and longevity, and you need to know you're going to get paid. You need a sportsbook that offers everything, including live betting, MMA, golf, horses, esports, all kinds of your favorite crazy bets and parlays. Call today 1-800-79-BETUS. That's 1-800-79-BETUS, and they'll walk you through setting up an account. Nobody in the industry gets better bonuses than BETUS. Join now. Mention 97.5, and you can get up to 200% in bonuses on your first deposit. Nobody beats that. Head to BETUS.com. Join today. That's BETUS, where the game begins.
My name is Bob Lee, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Drift Bar. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Yordan Alvarez, 37 home runs in season, 97 RBIs, a pitch swing, and there's a high fly left field. Driven back, now it's headed for the Crawford boxes, and it's gone! He's done it again! Alvarez to the opposite field, a two-run shot here in the sixth inning.
Two-run shot by Yordan Alvarez in the sixth inning. The go-ahead home run. Astros would hold on to that lead. They got the insurance run later in the eighth after they intentionally walked Yordan Alvarez to face Alex Bregman, and Bregman made the Mariners pay.
Of all guys to do that to,
yeah,
he was chomping at the bit, and he was going to make them pay. He knew he loved every bit of that.
You brought this up yesterday, that you don't think Yordan Alvarez is going to get another pitch to hit this entire series. Even in his first couple of at-bats yesterday, I thought he was chasing some pitches out of the zone, and Castillo was able to get him out. In that sixth inning, pitch he hit was a baseball off the outside corner. It was 99, a baseball off the plate, and he still was able to go the other way, drive it into the Crawford boxes for the home run. And then Scott Servais, as soon as Jordan Alvarez came up in the eighth, Scott Servais quickly put up the four, said, we're not pitching to that guy. And then you talked about the importance of Alex Bregman in this series, because if that is going to be the strategy against Jordan Alvarez in this series, and if there are more series, then Alex Bregman has to be able to step up in those spots and deliver whenever he's called upon. And he did that in the eighth. Took 101 from Munoz on the outside corner the other way. I thought that Haniger had a chance there for the put out at the plate, but bobbled it, and that bobble cost him any opportunity to at the plate, because Haniger has a pretty good arm. That bobble might have cost him that opportunity. But how are managers, Scott Servais, Game 3, the rest of this series, whoever, you know, if the Astros go on further than this ALDS, whoever the opponent is in the ALCS, like we talked yesterday, he's not going to see anything else to hit. You can make the case he didn't see anything to hit yesterday. Mm-hmm. Pitching around Yordan doesn't even work, because pitching around Yordan led to a two-run homer in the Crawford boxes yesterday. What is the plan going to be for Yordan the rest of this series and the rest of this postseason?
I mean, look, the rest of this postseason will be more clearly defined by who they're playing and what the situation is, but I think that situationally is what the Mariners are going to have to do. If there's two outs and nobody on, now you can pitch to him a little bit, but you have to be very, very, very familiar with his hot and cold zones, and then you have to be at least a couple of inches away from those hot and cold zones and never mess up, because you understand that if you got a big run, you know, a two outs, nobody on, or you've got a multiple run lead and he's up, you can think about and entertain the idea of pitching to him. But other than that, because of the fact that the help around him is also stepped up, we know Bregman's hot. We know that obviously after the home run to get him started yesterday, Tucker, who we also talked about yesterday, was a guy that at any time could hurt you. That there, and now Pena is consistently doing what we wanted him to do, because he's gotten, he's shown that he's not going away. And Altuve at the top of the lineup. Their first five right now are all dialed in. So no mistakes can be made, but the last guy you want to beat you is the guy that's beaten you both games so far.
Here was Dusty Baker after the game, because you have a runner at first base. You have two outs in the eighth inning. Putting a runner in scoring position. Look, Alex Bregman's no slouch. Is he the guy who finished second in MVP voting in 2019? Probably not. You can certainly make that argument. I think that's a fair take to have. But he's still Alex Bregman. He's still somebody that can beat you. Here was Dusty after the game talking about that walk and who it reminded him of.
I thought about Barry Bonds. I mean, that was some Barry Bonds type stuff there. I mean, that's the ultimate respect. And, Bregman rises to the occasion, too. That's why I got Bregman hitting behind Yordan, because all you need in that situation is a base hit. And right away I thought about, I've seen that a bunch of times, but not in a long time since Barry Bonds.
That's pretty high praise for Yordan Alvarez. Look, if you go by the numbers, pitching to Yordan Alvarez there might give you a better chance of preventing a run in the eighth inning. Alex Bregman, more times, gets a hit more often than Yordan Alvarez. It's an extra base hit, right? Like, those are just the numbers. So walking Yordan, moving Pena to second base, and all of a sudden bringing Bregman up to the box with a runner in scoring position, you're going to score a run more often than not than pitching to Yordan Alvarez. But this is now the respect that Yordan Alvarez has garnered, right? So you have managers that are going against the numbers, and I don't even blame Scott Servais for doing it. Like, I don't blame him for walking Yordan Alvarez after what Yordan Alvarez has done in the first two games. But now you're going against the numbers it increases the likelihood for the Astros to score a run in that spot.
Yeah, no, you're right. I think you kind of got to pick your poison, though. I mean, you look
Absolutely.
At it and you say, you know, what's the lesser of two evils? You know, having him do what he's already done to us, or, you know, live with the fact that I'm going to have to admit that, you know, if Bregman beats us, then Bregman beats us, or someone else beats you. I think that Scott Servais, I don't blame him. I mean, I think he played it out for the most part exactly the way I would have played it out. I don't think, in certain situations in professional sports, no matter how much you have the best laid plans, if you have a professional athlete that you are talking to that has ability, they sometimes, no matter what you say, is going one in one ear and out the other, because they have the mentality, which they should, of I can beat anybody. And if his stuff is good, my stuff is better. And I think after the game, Castillo kind of alluded to that, where he said, you know what, I get he's good. My stuff is good, too. And like you said, it wasn't exactly like it came right down Main Street, screaming, hit me.
It was outside of the zone.
Yeah, it was outside of the zone, and he was flirting, But sometimes flirting will get you in a bad predicament, and it did again.
If you're in Scott Service's shoes in the eighth inning, you walking Yordan to that spot?
I think I am.
Facing Bregman, runner at second instead?
I think, you know, basically what you've already been through, it's like, you know, fool me once, you know, shame on me, fool me twice, whatever it is. Shame on him if he gets beat a third time, right? Because it's happened twice. It's the same guy doing the same thing. And if it would happen again, now he would really be taking some serious heat.
If I'm in Service's shoes, I can live by being beaten by Bregman more than I can live by being beaten by Yordan Alvarez. It's the same way I feel like if the Yankees are the opponent for the Astros, if the Astros are lucky enough to advance and the Yankees get by the Guardians, that's the same way I feel about Aaron Judge. Like, I'm not saying you're going to pitch around him every at-bat. I'm not saying you're going to intentionally walk him every at-bat. But in critical situations, I rather get beat by the dude hitting after Aaron Judge than Aaron Judge, even if it doesn't make sense by the numbers.
You think about it. From baseball experts to fan base alike, no one's going to hate Scott Service or come at him if he walks Yordan Alvarez. If he beats you a third time, he may be in jeopardy of losing his job.
I think if you look back at yesterday's decisions, and look, I don't even blame Scott Service for the home run in the sixth inning by Yordan Alvarez. It was that far off the zone. But I think that Scott Service is being more criticized today by pitching to Yordan Alvarez in the sixth inning than by intentionally walking Yordan Alvarez in the eighth. That then led to another run being scored, too, because Alex Bregman was able to drive in Jeremy Pena. Did you say that Altuve's dialed in? Some texters are saying that he's not. He hasn't got a hit in the series.
No, he hasn't got a hit in the series yet, but, I mean, he's the guy you least worry about. I think he's going to get dialed in. I think the top of your lineup is something that I don't worry about, and I don't worry about Jose Altuve. Yep. So, yeah, no, if it came across that way, it's not what I'm just saying. I don't think anybody worries, and I think we've seen this too. Most managers in this league are going to tell you, if there's a clutch spot with Altuve coming up, that's not a good spot for them to be in. They don't want that. They'd rather face somebody else too. So I think he's someone that's feared by the other team's lineup and manager, and that he would be respected. Now that Pena has got himself into the conversation as a guy that you can't just look at being able to attack and think you can get the best of, the top five in this lineup are going to be respected by anybody you face in the playoffs.
I'm not worried about Yordan long term. Altuve. I'm not worried about Altuve. Altuve is going to figure it out. Altuve is going to be able to make sure that he gets things going. Maybe if it's not in this series, it's in the next series. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. I am curious in Game 3, you know, how Yordan is attacked. Like, even in the first inning, like, if he comes up with two outs, nobody on base, how is George Kirby going to face, like, attack Yordan Alvarez? Like, that's a spot where you're not going to intentionally walk a dude with two outs, nobody on base, but are you still pitching around him? Because yesterday he was chasing some pitches out of the zone.
Boy,
now,
he
homered with a pitch out of the zone.
We said he was doing them some favors early on because they weren't great pitches, and he was actually helping them out by chasing them. So, I mean, it is going to be interesting the rest of the way. It's going to be a different dynamic, but I think you have to be very careful not to ride the wave of emotion going back to Seattle. The crowd's going to be into it, and you're going to think anything could be any different just because you're in a different park. You can't pitch to this guy right now. He's absolutely, you know, towering inferno hot. And the last thing you want to do is have your series and your season end because you decided, well, what's it going to hurt if we try it one more time? We can go after him.
Chris at Humble says Tuve is dialed in defensively. Those two plays he made yesterday, especially the one with Julio Rodriguez, like going up the middle, like fielding, it's one thing. But to throw out Julio Rodriguez, who runs really well, that's the other thing. Because, look, Ty France, the guy he got out to lead off the next inning, Ty France doesn't run well. He had plenty of time to, you know, throw him out. But to throw out Julio Rodriguez, who's one of the fastest players in the league, on a rocket up the middle where he went Derek Jeter and left his feet, I mean, Jose Altuve kind of turned back the clock defensively.
No, those don't get enough credit in the aftermath of the game as being another reason why you won the game. Because of the fact that when you look at it and say, hey, man, if he doesn't make those two plays, and credit to Yuli, too, which made the second one was a really tough scoop that he had. It popped up real quick on him. But you look at the scoops that Yuli made, the plays that Altuve made, and how it related to a game as close as this game. Those were game changers and game savers, too. And he tip of the cap for sure on both plays to Jose Altuve.
713-780-ESPN. How do the Mariners face Yordan Alvarez the rest of the series? How do opposing managers deal with Yordan Alvarez the rest of the postseason if the Astros have a deep run. 713-780-3776. Also, let's break down the pitching matchup from yesterday. Did Fromber do a good job? Dusty thought he did great. Did he? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, big weekend coming up. We already know there's plenty of Major League Playoff baseball going on right now and going on throughout the weekend. College football, NFL football. You want a place to bet on it, and you want to make the most uninteresting game more interesting, you go to mybookie.ag. The reason why I always tell you to do that is because they always take care of their customers, and they're doing it again right now in a multitude of ways. One, they still got that prop builder going on. You don't like point spreads and over-unders, but you want to see if you can make some money. Well, maybe there's a stat that you know that you've been focused on that not enough people are paying attention to. Maybe it's a team stat, a player stat. You want to pick a prop stat and make a bet around it? Prop Builder lets you do just that. The other way that they're taking care of their customers, right now they're doing it again with that double your next deposit deal. And all you got to do is remember the promo code BET975. Go to mybookie.ag right now, and when you make your next deposit, put in the promo code BET975. If you put $200 in, it's instantaneously going to be $400 in your account. All the way up to $1,000, they're going to double it. More money in your account, more games you can bet on, and, of course, more chances to win. They take care of their customers, so you go to MyBookie. Check them out right now. MyBookie.ag, promo code BET975. Like I always tell you, bet anything, anytime, anywhere, with the only place I tell you to do it, MyBookie.ag.
ESPN 97.5. This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Drift Bar. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We'll get into the assessment of Fromber and Luis Castillo in just a moment. Killer Bees broadcasting from Drift, though, in the Heights, 1207 West 20th. They opened up early for us. They usually don't open until 3. But they're always nice hosts, such generous hosts. They open up early for the Killer Bees, the Hive, anybody else who wants to come out here. So swing on by, hang out with us. The Wheelhouse will be here until 7 as well. Weather is beautiful. They got the games on, wall-to-wall TVs. They also have the biggest TV in the Heights. Two biggest screens in the Heights, 250-inch screen on the south patio. Great place to watch the games today. It is dog-friendly. Also a great place to watch some LSU football because Drift is the LSU Houston headquarters this football season, the official LSU alumni watch party. And then also on Sundays. Look, no Texans game this Sunday. It's a bye week. So Drift will put it on any NFL game that you want. They got the Red Zone channel. They got the whole Sunday ticket package. But they'll make sure that they put a TV on for any game that you request. Speaking of the baseball action, little Giancarlo Stanton with a two-run dong. Yankees have the early lead of the Guardians 2-0. 713-780-ESPN, our HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. 9057, I'm sorry, but hindsight is 20/20. You can't walk Alvarez with your ace on the mound, one of the best pitchers in the league. Anyone else pitching, yes, but your ace, you have to pitch to him.
Nope.
See, in the sixth inning, whenever Yordan walked up in the sixth inning and Luis Castillo just gave up that bloop single to Pena to extend the inning, which tip your cap to Jeremy Pena, I didn't really see a scenario where Castillo wasn't going to at least work to Yordan. Like, pitch around him, and he started to try to pitch around him. Pitches out of the zone. Nothing in the zone, but not a straight-up intentional walk.
I think as much as the baseball competition committee has made bigger bases for next year, no ace on the planet is not going to tell you that they have bigger balls this year. And because of that, they're not going to shy away from anybody. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the same way a Verlander or a Gerrit Cole might just ramp it up a little bit more, but they're not going to shy away from the challenge of going at him. And I credit him for doing that. It's just that in that moment, he's not going to pay the ultimate price for giving up the home run ball. His manager is, and that's just part of baseball. I don't think in certain situations when you look at it, it's an easy – I think to me it's an easy choice no matter how hot Alex Bregman is, that if you got a guy that has hit two massive blasts that have put you in this predicament in this series, that you don't face him for a third time.
Well, the 60 only hit one. I mean, the 60 hadn't hit the second yet.
Right. But I'm saying, I'm talking about later in the game, that made more sense, that you walk even more sense.
But he was talking about the ace. I mean, the only time, I mean, the sixth
so
inning
talking
is
about,
the,
and
is
with the
pitch,
home
is
run,
the in question.
I think that again, I really believe, and you may disagree with me, but I think what factored in more than anything else was the fact that he had extra adrenaline going because he was pissed off that that ball fell behind behind second base. He was mad, and it doesn't matter who he was mad at. You can look at his body language. You can look at his facial expressions, and you could tell he was a little bit pissed off.
Yeah, I mean, the pitch was 99, though. He'd been
I don't care what velocity, Jeremy. I'm talking about where
extra, how do you have extra oomph if you're throwing, you're sitting what you've been sitting the
I'm
whole
telling,
game?
I'm telling you that from the standpoint of what he was going to throw, and you can say all you want that it was a baseball off the plate, and he still got it, and that's kudos to the hitter. You tip your cap, sure. But I'm telling you that from a from his perspective, with a little bit more adrenaline, that changes where the ball ends up. He may not have even wanted it to go where it, you know, that as close as it got.
So you think it was a mistake?
I don't know that I can say that it was a mistake because I know that in the post-game press conference he said, "I'm not backing down to him." Basically, I'm gonna, you know, I went at him, and I believe that he would have done it again, and that's what you want out of your ace. It's just in that situation, I think sometimes emotions can get the best of you, and that can take you a little bit out of how pinpoint you have to be with your command. And for whatever the reason, again, with a short porch and an easy flip of the wrists for a guy that can go the other way, Yordan did what he did.
Yeah. See, I understand what you're saying. That's just, it wasn't a mistake pitch. And it was 99, which he'd been sitting the whole game.
I'm not saying it's a mistake pitch. I think the, I just think emotions kind of had a role in that. Whether it was he didn't exactly throw it. It's not a mistake pitch because, you're like you said, it wasn't like 6 feet off the plate. It's just sometimes that pitch, when you want it to be low and outside and down, or and sometimes you want and it gets a little bit higher in the zone, like any ball from the middle up outside has the ability when you go the other way to take that thing to the Crawford box. If that's middle, low, and out, now all he's going to do is, at the very worst, is put the ball on the ground or hit a line drive. The fact that it was up and elevated in the zone allowed him to flip it into the boxes.
King of Twitch mentions the opposing managers pitching to Yordan the rest of the way. They got to go low and in. I heard Roger saying that he, whenever he was on with the bench, and I heard Paul talking about this on the drive-in, saying that he expects Yordan to get plunked in Game 3, which Scott Servais has shown a tendency of being, you know, wanting to hit hitters. That's usually in retaliation after his hitters have been hit. I don't think that they want to poke the bear, and I don't think the Astros would fall for anything like that. Now, I do believe with what Rogers had to say, and look, maybe you miss one inside and it does end up hitting him. I do believe that Yordan needs to be pitched inside. Like, if I'm the manager going up against Yordan Alvarez, instead of allowing that extension, because we saw what he did with the pitch, baseball off the zone, he still had the power to drive it however far it went, 380 feet, I don't know, but deep enough to lead pretty much every ballpark in Major League Baseball, I think you have to bust him inside with heat. And if he beats you with heat inside, now the problem there is if you leave one over the middle of the plate, it's going to go a very long way like Robbie Ray, but I think you got to go fastball high and in, maybe not high and in, but in on the hand so he doesn't have the chance to extend.
I understand, especially if you're talking about a guy like Clemens who had the ability because he had the stuff.
You need velo.
He could push you off the plate with some heaters to try and keep you from getting that extension to the outside corner and off the plate. I don't know that many guys can do that because they're not willing to take the chance of, if I don't go in enough, if I don't bring it fast enough in the right spot, he can turn it around, spin my cap, and put it in the bleachers. And I think that's not a proposition that a lot of pitchers are willing to try to screw with. And I think that's, again, obviously an advantage to the Astros. But I think as this run goes deeper and as we get into more and more playoff games, you're going to see more managers that say, look, understand that we can be as precise as we can be and we can try and get this guy out. But unless it's a situation where the bases are loaded, there's only one out, and I've got to pitch to him, and even still I think there are people that are going to tell you they should probably think about walking him, I just think that he's going to see less and less to hit, and not many people are willing to take that chance.
I think what Yordan showed you yesterday, though, is that, like, less and less to hit might have to be further and further away from the zone than you think. Like, a baseball out of the zone to most hitters, they're spitting on that. They're not swinging at that. They're certainly, if they are swinging at it, they're going to get themselves out. They're not driving it out of the ballpark. So a baseball out of the zone to most hitters isn't something they're going to do much damage with. I think that now has to grow. Like, the strike zone for Yordan, you're not going to get the edges, but now whenever you're pitching around Yordan Alvarez, you almost have to add two baseballs to the zone and make sure you're pitching
that
outside
itself,
of that radius.
That lends itself to going inside more, right? Because now if you miss and make a mistake, it's more in than it is in his sweet spot, his power zone. And then the other thing to contemplate on that is, when you're talking about a Castillo, his off-speed pitches, when it comes to like a changeup, it's going to be 90-plus, right? So what you might be better off with a sweeping off-speed pitch that looks like it's center cut when it leaves the pitcher's hand and ends up way out of the zone and get him to flail and chase. Because anything hard 90-plus that sits anywhere near the outside part of the plate, he can get to and he can do damage with it.
Yeah, I think I throw three sliders at his back foot and hope that he swings. And if he doesn't, then I throw him four sliders at his back foot and walk him. He crushes changeups on the year. I know that his home runs in this series have been on fastballs, but his numbers against changeups this year are better than any numbers of any other pitch that he's
facing. And that's why I'm saying you got to have a breaking pitch,
yep,
not a changeup, and you've got to be able to place it, like you said, depending on if you're right-handed or left-handed, middle to the dive down to his back foot or middle to the outside. By the time it gets anywhere near the plate, it is unhittable, and he's chasing and flailing at a bad pitch.
Corey says hindsight is 20/20, but in that situation, if it was Verlander versus Judge, then as a manager, I'm throwing up the four fingers. That's an interesting question. If you're Dusty Baker, you're in the dugout, you're facing Aaron Judge, runner at first base, you're up a run with two outs, sixth inning. You pitch into Judge if you're Verlander on the mound?
Can I tell you who is? Justin Verlander. I don't care what Dusty says.
Yeah.
Short of him making sure that he tells the umpire four fingers and points to first base, no matter what Dusty wants to do there, I think I'm most confident in saying Justin is pitching to him. He's not backing down. That's what I was talking about, that mentality that even Castillo has. I don't think there's any way in hell that Justin Verlander allows anybody to dictate a game for him and puts four fingers up.
Yeah, I think it'd be Verlander making that call. I think I'm pitching to him. I think I'm pitching to him in that spot because it's a tough one. It's a tough one. 713-783.
Whose stuff do you believe more in? Not fastball.
I go Verlander.
Your secondary stuff. I do too. I would say that as a veteran pitcher, with the ability to think through an at bat, with good secondary stuff, I would trust JV to say, I gave you the money. You've carried us to the promised land before. I've got to trust you're going to get this guy out.
And the difference, too, I think a little bit between Judge and Yordan is that Judge has more swing and miss than Yordan does. Yordan's a better overall hitter. Like, he can hit for contact. Where Judge has some holes, you know, in his swing, he has some holes in the hot-cold zone. Now, this year has been much improved over, like, his entire career. But Judge is prone to the strikeout. And Yordan Alvarez,
Yordan's more likely to pound it in the ground and hit one into the shift.
He's more of a contact guy. He can hit for a little bit better average, even though Judge had a better average this year. Judge has a little bit more swing and miss. 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees broadcasting live from Drift in the Heights. We'll get into the conversation a little bit when we return about what we thought of Fromber's start in Game 2 of the ALDS. Also, how about Jeremy Peña going from rookie to seasoned veteran with some of these at-bats that he's taking in the playoffs? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, guys, you got a lot of garbage and junk that you'd like to get rid of laying around your house or your garage, or, you know, you're doing some remodeling and, you know, you thought about all the new stuff you're going to put in, but you didn't really think through what you had to get rid of. That's why you go Vivia. Go Vivia.com right now. Vivia provides you with 10-yard and 15-yard roll-off dumpsters right in your driveway, right where you need it. And you know what? They can drop off and pick up the same day, so they can take out that trash, take out that garbage, and give you a clean and very, very easy on the eyes look to the outside of your house as you keep doing some things to make the inside look great too. They also do the same thing for project managers. You need a dumpster? They'll have it there for you. You make arrangements, same day drop off and pick up, and that's the biggest and most advantageous thing about this. It's not going to sit there for days on end with whatever you threw in it. They'll arrange to drop it off in the morning, pick it up at night, bring it back if you need it, take care of every detail along the way. They do a great job. We use them at the ESPN Golf Tournament. You've seen great businesses like Texas Custom Patios use it when they have a job to do and they need to have it done the right way. And that means getting rid of the trash. That's why you go Vivia. Check them out today. GoVivia.com. That's GoVivia.com.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real. Let's go. Fun. Sports. This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Drift Bar. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We are indeed at Drift in the Heights. They opened up early for us. Usually not open yet, but happy hour every Monday through Friday until 8 p.m. $1 off all draft beers, $6 house ranch waters, house wine, $6, $7 Maker's Mark bourbon. A great spot to dip off work a little bit earlier. Come hang out with us. Come hang out. Beautiful weather. Great spot to watch a bunch of baseball.
Beautiful people.
Beautiful people, yeah.
And then
I see what
you
did there. I see what you did there. That's mean. Great place to watch some LSU football, too. This is the official LSU alumni watch party every Saturday, every game day. And then, of course, they have the NFL ticket package, NFL Sunday ticket package. So any game that you want to watch, they'll make sure that they put it on for you. They also have the two biggest screens in the Heights, 250-inch screen on the south patio. It's dog-friendly. Great place to hang out. Great place to watch some ball. Come on out to Drift. We'd love to see you. We're here till 3. Wheelhouse, we'd love to see you. They're here till 7.
Hey, maybe Branham wasn't in danger yesterday on the Yordong.
Branham,
he?
Baby?
Yeah.
I was a little more careful this time.
Can I call it Baby Branham instead of?
No, it's Branham, baby. Oh. Get it right. That's his name.
Okay.
Branham, baby. Mm-hmm. He was in the same spot, though. He was in the same spot when Yordan Alvarez hit the walk-off in game one that he was in yesterday when Yordan hit the home run, the go-ahead home run in game
two. So you're a little superstitious?
I guess Branham baby is. I didn't put him in that spot.
Well, he didn't get there by himself.
He didn't, but it wasn't okay. Me that put him there.
All right.
Now, he was turned in a different direction. He was head first the first time and then feet first the second time, but in the same spot. That's all that matters. He was in the same spot. So maybe Branham baby's got – or yeah, he's got something to do. I already forget what his name is.
Many a man, a single man, has dealt with similar situations.
Yeah, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-ESPN. Lamont's been on one since last night. He was he was Twitter trolling some Seattle fans, which I've tried to stay out of that whole thing during this series because I got thrown into the Seattle – thanks to Paul Gallant, I got thrown into the Seattle Wolves during the regular season.
You kind of
– and I went right back at
him. Yes, you did.
I went right. I wasn't gonna step down. You kidding me? I went right back at the Mariner fans. But I'm waiting until the series is over before I have anything to say. But Lamont started to go at some Seattle folks. I saw some Seattle TV guy, too, put the score of the game yesterday. He said, Cheaters 4, Mariners 2. Which, hey, all's well that ends well. You get a victory, you get a victory. But Lamont got called an elitist. He got called an entitled sports fan by some of
really?
The... Really? Yeah. Have you ever heard of a Houston sports fan being called entitled?
No.
Yeah, it's weird.
And then he roped me in. Because then he took one of the idiots that is just a fan that was going off on all that, and he goes, and Pac-Man Joel says that's why it's so vitally important that if they win another title, that all of this will go away. I said, Lamont, let's be very clear about this. I said national baseball media and baseball types would start to give them their true respect and ease up. You can't completely convince any dumbass to come off of the stupid takes that they will die on. And there's plenty in Seattle, as you discovered, by going at them. I have a whole bunch saved up. I'm very superstitious way. But when the series is over, I've got answers to that stupid T-shirt that they had printed. Believe me.
Even the baseball types, I think that they will, like what you said, they'll go a long way to separating themselves from that. But they'll still take their little jabs. That will never go away.
Yep. There is a certain few guys I know for sure that will take their little, like you said, parting jabs or in the middle of a complimentary column will still have one little barb that will be meant to say, we still we can forgive a little bit, but we don't forget. But when you look at it, that's where the national types, to my point, if they win it, the national types say, look, there's only a handful of guys that are left over from 17. Give them their flowers. Look at the longevity. Look at the way they were able to survive and thrive. Dusty Baker, when he took the job, when you looked at it in retrospect, if I would have laid this out for you and said you're going to make, multiple World Series appearances, you're going to do this, you're going to do that, you're going to make all these American League Championship Series, people would have said, you're out of your mind. They're taking on too much heat. There's no way that they're a sinking ship. There's no way they're taking on this much water and surviving. To see where they are now and then to be able to put the exclamation point on it by winning another one, that's when all these national guys have to reevaluate.
Yeah, you see Passan and Ben Verlander get into it the other day?
That was great.
I loved it. I wonder what sparked that.
Passan was the one that kind of stirred it up.
No, he's the one who started it, but I wonder why Passan took that to Twitter. Because there had to be something before that made Passan tweet out what he said about Verlander, I'm doing my best, Ben Verlander, Otani. Like, there had to be something before that we don't know about.
Maybe something got them. But you know what? National guys, it's petty just like it is in sports and relationships and life. I think a lot of national guys resent the fact that
Ben Verlander just started at the very beginning of all this, showing man love and maybe trolling a little bit, Shohei Ohtani. And then all of a sudden, it became a full-blown thing where he's making trips and seeing Ohtani and hanging out with him and getting exclusives and doing all these things. And, you know, Joel Osteen's illegitimate brother gets a little bit, you know, chapped under, you know, his big-ass teeth and decides that he doesn't like that Ben Verlander's getting things that he's not getting. And then Jeffy tries to spew venom on Twitter because he's so good at it.
Shohei Ohtani, I can understand the man crush. I think he's the best player in baseball.
Yes, you do.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-ESPN. Some folks are asking us what the address is for Drift Bar, 1207 West 20th. In the Heights, if you want to swing on by. At least some of you are invited. No, I'm just kidding. All of you are invited.
No, you're right the first time.
Jeremy Pena, yesterday, you mentioned the little look. The Texas leaguer in the sixth inning, it's a hit. It's a line drive in the box
That's
score.
Right.
But, hey, he had a couple of hits there. We know that he extended the game in game one, allowed Yordan to come to the plate. And the way he's done it, too, though, like all regular season, what was the pitch that gave him trouble? The slider away, flailing at it, swinging and missing. He had a tough time, one, hitting it. Two, he had a tough time just laying off of it, taking it for a ball. Pena, I've noticed in these first two games, he's taken – I don't know if it's because he's locked in. I don't know if it's because, you know, it's the lights are brighter and he's stepping up to the moment. But he looks like he's went from somebody who took rookie at-bats all year long and still had a very good rookie year, 250 average, over 20 home runs, played an elite level of defense at the shortstop position. Great rookie year. With a great rookie year, he still had holes in his swing. The slider away was his biggest bugaboo. He's doing a better job at spitting at that when it's out of the zone. And then, of course, in game one, he had one right there, outside corner at the knees, that he was able to line into center field for the base hit, brought Yordan to the plate, three-run homer. We know the rest of the story. Jeremy Pena has gone from, at least in my mind, Blankers, and I'm curious where you're at on this, from a rookie to a dude that looks like a seasoned veteran now and has taken some really quality plate appearances.
I think, and roll with me a little bit here, if you will, Jeremy, but I think that this series is a microcosm of Jeremy Pena's first year in the major leagues. Like, we were talking about yesterday, his first couple of bats, he looked very anxious. He looked almost out of place. He looked like he was trying to find his way. And we were talking about, would he be able to settle down now based on how the game ended? And we're going to see a whole lot and learn a whole lot about Jeremy Pena based how he comes out that point forward in game two. And he came out and showed you exactly what he was made of. Remember now, his first game when he played in the major leagues as a member of the Astros with all eyes on him, he struggled. It was a little bit rough. It wasn't ideal, and everybody started immediately going, he's not Correa, he's not Correa, he's not Correa. And from that point forward, he settled in both offensively and defensively. He did everything that you could have expected from him and more, and I think we saw that yesterday. We know, and you and I have been leaders of this bandwagon that a lot of people aren't willing to jump on, he's an above-average defender no matter what.
I think that's selling him short.
And I think that, you know, you and I would go a lot further, but we have to fight tooth and nail sometimes to get people to at least give him that much love. But when you see what he's able to do at the plate, too, and because we've scrutinized how important that two-hole is with this lineup, just leave him alone and let him play now, because I think that he's in his element. He knows exactly what he needs to do and how he needs to play, and that's a good thing if you're an Astros fan to know that he's settling in nicely to where he fits on this team and in this lineup in the playoffs.
I love him in the two spot, too, because he does see more fastballs because he has Yordan on deck. He's hitting behind Altuve, so more times than not, it hadn't been the case so far in the ALDS because Altuve has not been able to record a hit, but more times than not, he has somebody on base whenever he's coming up. Plus, the Astros record with him hitting in the two spot for some reason is really, really good. Scott Servais.
No, last thing I was going to say on that too. But I think that the other thing was, we know when you mentioned his fastballs and everything like that, he looked like he had to reprove himself early on in game one, right? Like, no matter what he did in the regular season, this was, I got to prove I can play in the playoffs too. And he was trying to pull everything. When he decided that he could go with pitches, that he could just, all he's got to do is barrel up fastballs and let that do the damage wherever it lands, I think he kind of changed the approach at the plate, and that was a difference maker.
713-780-ESPN. Here was Seattle manager Scott Servais after the game talking about what Jeremy Pena has meant to this Houston Astro lineup.
Pena getting on base in front of the Yordan certainly makes it a little bit more challenging. Credit to him. He had great at-bats. He's had good at-bats here the first couple games in the series. He's had a really good season. He's a good young player. And he's been huge for them this year. So, you know, the guys around Yordan will really dictate, you know, what you do. And those guys were really good around him today as well.
That was Scott Servais talking about Pena and what he does to this lineup. Plus, he extends the lineup. I think he makes the lineup a little bit deeper. Ocho, who's been against Jeremy Pena in that second spot. Ocho says, I'm still not ready to anoint Pena as Mr. Two spot after yesterday's production. He still didn't look comfortable despite his production. I'd still like to see Diaz there. Ocho, you're not getting what you want. Jeremy Pena is going to be in the second spot. He's picked up a couple of big hits, and I disagree with you. I think that he has looked comfortable in that second spot and in the box. And plus, he's going to get more fastballs, which is good. Now, to his point about Aledmys Diaz, Aledmys Diaz got himself a base knock yesterday. We were talking about this yesterday.
Was
on
he like
the show.
0 for 22?
I think he finished the regular season like 1 for 22, 1 for 23. Okay. Like he finished the regular season really bad, which is I think why his man went why Trey Mancini got the DH start in game one. See if they could get him going. Look, Diaz only had the one hit yesterday. One hit's better than none. I'm rolling out Aledmys Diaz as my starter in the DH spot in game three again. I think he earned it.
It's an interesting proposition for Dusty because of the fact that it's not just Aledmys Diaz that you're making a decision on with Trey Mancini. You're also looking at center field in a position that we said had to be analyzed. And Jake looked completely clueless. And granted, it was against their ace, and it was a tough scenario to be set up to perform in, but he didn't exactly look strong at the plate. So I believe, you know, we're going to see Chaz back in center field. I believe that from the standpoint of looking at Aledmys Diaz, he didn't do anything to deserve to be sat down. Now, that hasn't stopped Dusty or James Click in the past, right, whoever makes the decision. But I think you're right. I mean, if push comes to shove, I would rather have Diaz and his contact as opposed to the either, you know, boom or bust from a Mancini going into a game three.
They put Myers in a tough spot to have success yesterday.
They did.
Here you go, Jake. You get a playoff start. You're going up against Luis Castillo, best pitcher in the American
League. Watch
two
strike threes.
I mean, he was fooled. Luis Castillo's got good stuff. I mean, I see what you're saying. It wasn't impressive by Myers. They didn't put him in a position to have much success,
right,
though.
You're right.
Killer Bees broadcasting live from the Drift Bar in the Heights. Come hang out with us. We'll be here till 3. Will House will be here until 7. 713-780-ESPN. We try to make you some money when we come back. Beezy Money, the Killer Bees, look at the NFL lines this week. And we make our best guesses. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I was at Apollo Men's Health bright and early this morning, and you guys should check it out too because they have a multitude of different ways they can help you just by trying to win the day. You're not trying to win an Olympic gold medal. You're trying to just do the things on your checklist that you need to do for your family, for yourself, for your job. Maybe you want to work out, and you don't have the energy that you used to have, and you think that it may be gone forever. It's not. They can get it back for you, and there's a ton of ways that they can try. They can get you with B12 shots. If you don't think that's enough, you can look at all the different ways they offer hormone therapy. And they have all kinds of other services, too. They can get you to recover quicker after a good workout with HGH peptide therapy. You want to get on a full body composition analysis when you start a workout program, because then you can chart your results, see how your body fat's going down, your muscle mass is going up, and all the important details that go into getting yourself in better shape. Basically, all what I'm trying to tell you to do is just check it out and see if it's right for you. Go to ApolloMH.com right now. And then if you think that there's something that interests you, sign up for a first appointment. You'll find out that most major insurance is accepted. There's discounts for military personnel and first responders. Mention my name, Joel Blank, free B12 shot, or one of those body composition analysis right when you get to your first visit. Then from there, tell them what's bothering you. Tell them what you're trying to get better at or where you want to improve. They will set up a program that works for you, too. They're good people doing great things on a daily basis. They're the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
ESPN 97.5.